Are you a member of a loyalty program? Is it eBucks, Voyager Miles, Ucount, Discovery Miles, Greenbacks, Avios, Smart Shopper, Bonvoy, or Skywards? Whether it's a bank, retailer, or even a restaurant, do you believe you're getting the maximum value out of yours? Are there even better ones out there that offer you more cash back or better points? Welcome to What's the Point, the podcast about loyalty programs and how you can maximize your rewards. And now, here's your host, Ilan Ressel.
Hello and welcome to this episode of What's the Point. Now today, we have got a guest in the studio with me. I'm joined today by Louis Robenheimer. Louis, welcome to What's the Point.
Oh, thanks very much, Ilan, and thanks for inviting me, and I'm really excited to be here.
Now, Louis, you've got a very interesting background because you come from the loyalty business, right? You used to work with a major program actually doing all the construction of a loyalty program. Tell us more about that and your background.
Yeah, Ilan, I was actually quite fortunate because when I started, I was the chief operating officer. And at that point, I was also quite fortunate to also manage the technology side of it, as well as the design component of it. And so it was basically, looking after the entire backing system of the program.
So how long have you been in the loyalty game? And give us a number of years in terms of your experience.
So I was 5 years now in the game as a chief operating officer and also as a, let's call it the CIO / design expert in that space. So, it was quite an interesting journey, and it's very interesting in terms of the science also behind it.
And that's the science you mentioned over there. That's something that we want to talk about a little bit today because I think a lot of people don't understand the value of points. I'm constantly, whenever I go to a braai, I'm talking to people and I kind of feel like I'm in this little echo chamber talking about how I'm excited about this program and that program. And, ooh, did you see this thing that came out that's new? And everyone looks at me like I've lost my mind. And I know that when you and I first met one another and we started talking about loyalty, I was like, oh, I found a kindred spirit over here. This is somebody who actually understands my obsession. We kind of clicked because it was something that we both were interested in.
Yeah. No, absolutely. What is very interesting about these type of discussions is always you're looking at it from a business perspective, setting up the programs to the benefit of the business, and then you also to talk to the customers or the consumers, and you always get their perception of what they want from the program. And then I was very fortunate to also do quite a lot of research on rewards and loyalty programs, and then you look at the academic perspective of it, and then you like almost put these three components together. And in the South African context, and not want to preempt the whole discussion a bit, but we saw that the three doesn't necessarily always match what the consumer wants versus what the business wants as a expected outcome and versus what the science says what we should do.
This is a talking point between my wife and myself. And I think a lot of people always talk about this in that, as I'm thinking of this from a consumer's point of view. Like you said, there's three parts. There's the consumer, which is what I kind of represent right here. There's the business, which you used to represent, but let's be very clear, you are no longer with any loyalty programs right now, but you're coming in as the expert to give us a perspective of what it's like to think about loyalty and rewards programs from a business perspective. And then thirdly, the scientific side. So the point of contention that my wife and I always have is I'll say to her, our points came in from this program. And, why didn't we hit that level? Something's wrong over here. Something happened. And she always says, there's always a catch. I don't know if you've ever heard of that phrase before.
Absolutely.
So this is one of the questions, and I don't mean to put you on the spot over here, but I have to ask you, are businesses trying to catch consumers out, or do they legitimately want people to take advantage of these loyalty programs and benefit in a big way?
Yeah, so for businesses, the important thing for businesses is obviously repeat purchases. What they want to achieve at the end of the day is you as a consumer or customer, that they create loyalty through differentiation, because the biggest problem currently in the market is commoditization of products. And specifically in the banking industry, it's becoming quite a big issue, because a transactional product is a transactional product, and a savings product is a savings product. And the big challenge is the differentiation that you want to design around that, to change the consumer behavior in such a way that consumers at the end of the day want to do repeat purchases. So what you want to do is you actually want, if you're in the banking and financial industry, you actually want the customer to say, yes, I've had a great experience in terms of taking up vehicle financing, and what I want to do is I want to open my home loan as well. Mm-hmm. If you just talk about asset-based financing. So you want that repeat purchases. You want the customer to come back. Research also shows it's extremely expensive to get new customers, and what you rather want to do is retain and maintain your current customers. So that's the game. That's a game for business. So business is about, you know, putting that extra bit on top, that cherry on top of the cake, and saying to the customer, and the customer then adopts that and say, well, that's great. You know, I actually like it. And the fact that I like it, you know, there's even the light that I'm getting out of it, because that's the new concept now in the theory, is we've moved past the fact to just decommoditize a product. We actually need to go into delighting customers. And the question is, so if you achieve that delightment with a customer, you at the end of the day will probably achieve repeat purchases. Now, that's from a business perspective.
Yes, tell us from a scientific point of view. Why do some people, maybe you can answer this, and maybe this is something that you've already thought about and done some research on, why do some people get totally obsessed with points and rewards programs, myself included, and other people just couldn't give a damn?
There's also a question around the segmentation of the market currently. And what the first question that you have to also ask yourself, and which you have to look at the customers, and which segments do they fall. Your entry-level customers, specifically in South Africa, you know, we're sitting probably with a good 30 million customers in South Africa, consumers, which are really an entry-level market, which do not necessarily would like to join rewards and loyalty programs to get value-added services, to go to some other spa treatment, or to go to overseas. They just cannot afford it. For mm-hmm. them, it's their basic living. So those type of customers, at the end of the day, are extremely sensitive around the monetary value that they get out of the program.
It's price, right?
It's price and what they get on every single purchase. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the new programs, some of the new programs that's now being launched.
I'm very excited about this Checkers Extra Savings one.
And what you see there is that you see 25% off instantly on selected products.
Yeah.
That's instant gratification. At the end of the day, for that market, it's all about getting money back into my pocket as soon as possible, because that money I'm going to use to buy essentials. Now, the literature talks about actually quite a lot, and it actually starts off with a guy called Herzenberg. He started the theory, which is, so we all know Maslow's theory.
Yes, Maslow's
hierarchy of needs.
Sure.
So what's actually quite fundamental about it is this guy actually started, Herzenberg started, the theory of consumer needs. So not basic needs in terms of what our basic, but what's a consumer's basic needs. And he actually leveled in three levels, and he starts off to say, but your basic need is a product. First, satisfy a simple product need for the customer. And then he says the second level to that is that you have to gratify the customer beyond that. And I don't think he said it in so many words, but it's more about then decommoditization, where everybody now starts to play. And then his third level says, and that's, by the way, a level that he only developed many years later in terms of hierarchy. And it's based on various research that was done by other researchers. We added a third level where he said, where the delight factor is coming in and the satisfaction levels is coming in. So what he basically says, first satisfy this basic product need, and we can have a discussion around what the product need means, because now that's an interesting one again, because the literature actually differentiates between that as well. But you basically start off with a basic product need. On top of that, there's something else that I want. For example, you know, if I buy, if you look at sports caps today, it's a closure. It's that one famous one that you pull open, and when you have a sports drink, you know, you drink through it. In the old days, it wasn't there.
Okay.
In the old days, it was just a PET or a HDP bottle, and you had your sports drink in, and you open a cap, and it spilled all over you. And then they developed these very clever sports caps, which you now open. And the sports cap is, you can see as a VAP, as a value-added product to the current product, which have added a lot of value to customers, and customers start to adapt that. And these days, you might not even see it's a value add. You see it as a basic product construct, but that's part of the product. But it didn't initially probably start there. It probably started there as a differentiator. So what he's talking about, he says the second level is adding those differentiators. And then the third level on top of that is the light. So the light factors in that example, which will probably be something like, you know, on the label, you know, if you buy it, you know, you can win a trip or something else. But it's the delight part. It's really that delight part for customers. And literature today says, if you design these programs and you don't reach the delight piece, you're going to miss the mark.
Sure. That's interesting. So, because now that you're putting it in these terms, I'm noticing certain things. I mean, I like all different things. For me, I kind of like the, you know, even just saving a cup. If I can save a rand somewhere, I still get excited about it. But I do also love the delight side of things and everything in between. And I recently saw something, it was probably about 2 days ago. I think it's actually currently on right now, up until the end of this year, 2019, where F&B, for example, has got some sort of a big promotion. You can win, I think they're putting out like, I don't know, it's something ridiculous, like 15 million rand or something like that. And with a grand prize being of 1 million rand. So are you saying that that is part of the delight factor? Because they want you to do the normal things like e-bucks and all the other things that F&B does offer. But this is taking it and getting into that third level, that delight level.
Absolutely. And but also what I'm saying is, you know, the different segments has different expectations in terms of what the light means. And there's a lot of research that needs to be done when you construct a program to understand what does these different levels mean for your specific segment. So the first thing we actually need to start off is do a proper segmentation of your base, and then based on your segmentation starts with some research in terms of what does the product proposition means, what does a value-added product or a value-added service or any differentiator on top of that means. And then you go to the next level and say, but what does delight means for these customers to the third level? So when you are successful in that, the literature talks about two things that's going to happen. You're either going to have behavioral adoption or attitudinal adoption. Now let me explain that a little bit more in more simplistic terms. Behavioral adoption is something where I will adopt it because I'm going to adopt it just because I'm used to it. I'm doing it every single day, and it's a normal behavior, and I'm just doing it on almost repetitively.
Okay, that's behavioral.
That's behavioral.
Okay.
But attitudinal is actually where you want to get, because I'm actually doing it because you convinced me to do it, not because I am doing it as a normal day-to-day activity.
That's the interesting thing, because like there's certain things that I do. I mean, I'll give you an example on a personal level. Last night, 8 o'clock, I look at it, it's Wednesday evening, and I look at my phone and I open up my, you know, I'm a Discovery Vitality freak. So I look at the phone, oh man, I've only got 200 Vitality points for the week. I've got to get to 900 by Friday night. Now it's Wednesday. I can only get a maximum of 300 points per day. So that means 300, 300, 300. I could do it, but I've got to get at least 100 points on Wednesday so that I can get 300 on Thursday and 300 on Friday that I can hit my 900 for the week. And so I go to the gym. I'm sitting there. It's 8:30 at night. I went there in my – I did have some sneakers on, my tackies, but I had like my work pants on, right, which are not really built for working out in, to be perfectly honest. I get to the gym, I obviously swipe my card, that instantly gives me 100 points, and then I call my wife and I say, do do you need me home like anytime soon? And she's like, why? I said, because if I do the 30-minute workout right now, I'm going to get 300 points, and then that will take me up to 500 for the week, and then I know that I only have to get 300 between the 2 days. So there I am, sitting in my work pants and my work shirt and my tackies, sitting on the elliptical machine, working out, looking at my heart rate. So it changed my attitude about it, as you're saying, which in turn has changed my behavior, all because I'm trying to get these points, and I'm sitting there going, what is wrong with me? Like, why am I doing this sort of weird stuff? But I know that if I hit my, my 900 points, that next Wednesday I'm going to get 3 chances on the game board to possibly win some really cool prizes and things like that. Even if it is just a couple of bucks, it really has made a huge change. So, personally speaking, I can tell you that what you're saying, the behavior and the attitude, certain programs, and of course, I'm happy to endorse certain ones that I take advantage of, and I'm always looking at new ones. But these ones have done that for me. They've actually changed the way that I behave. And then I got up early this morning, and I went to the gym again to get another 300 points. This time, at least, I was wearing some shorts.
Yeah, 100%. And it's that attitudinal piece that almost like you explained it actually quite well, is fighting your normal behavior.
Yeah.
It's where your attitude actually changes, and you're saying, listen, I'm going to fight a normal behavior of, I actually don't want to do it now, but I'm going to do it because the benefits is just phenomenal. So whatever, and your perception, it's phenomenal. And that's why it just changes your behavior. So it's quite interesting because if you then look from a model, so the consequence of that is repeat purchase behavior.
Yeah.
So that's almost like the end of that value chain, if you can if you can see it almost a value chain. There's certain products that you're interested in as a consumer. There's certain delight and satisfaction and behavioral and non-commoditizing factors put on top of that. That convinced you to, adopt that. It's either, attitudinal or behavioral, or, it changes your attitude, or you stay with your current behaviors. And if you have more attitudinal, at the end of the day, you then sit with more repeat purchases. So that's almost how that little value chain actually all fits together. And at the end, and that's purely almost from a scientific perspective. And that's why I'm saying when we had a discussion right in the beginning, it's quite interesting to have these discussions with consumers.
Mm. What did you learn? I mean, as you said, you find your market segment, you say, this is who we're after. And then how does it work? I mean, do you do sort of consumer studies where you get people around a table and you start asking them questions? What would you like if, because I did that once. I was part of something, and then they said, I remember what it was. It was Protea Hotels. When Protea got bought out by Marriott. Yeah. And then they said, hey, you've got this Protea special card it's called Pro Card, which I still subscribe to. It's a great program. And they said, now we're going to be, part of Marriott now. Would you be happy or would you be sad if you got this but not that? And they said, did you do something similar to that when you start initiating and setting up a program?
So I'm going to give you sad news, specifically in terms of South African context. Is I personally see that the South African programs is a follow me program. So it's a copy paste. So what happens is, and I don't want to mention program names now, the different rewards and loyalty programs, but you sit in the boardroom and always one program is held up and saying, oh, but this is an amazing program.
And it's working in America, and it's working in Australia.
Exactly.
So let's do the same thing here.
Or it's even working in South Africa. The one problem. So, by the way, South Africa is one of the countries with the highest amount of rewards and loyalty programs in the world.
So I'm quite surprised to hear you say that, well, maybe not, because there's so many over here that if something's working, let's say it's, the Smart Shopper program with Pick and Pay, like, okay, it's working, let's just copy them but make it slightly bit better. Let's offer maybe 0.5% better, and then, we'll take first place. So is that something that sort of happens?
That's what's happening. And the problem with that is that the market segments that you're playing in, is not the same market segments. Mm. So I mean, you can look up, and let's say I'm looking up to the Discovery program like you've just mentioned a bit earlier. So I'm looking up at the Discovery program. The Discovery member base is more your core middle market, which we call a core middle market, and upper, and your wealth base. It's more Discovery customers. It's not entry-level customers. And the problem is copying and pasting that program, and you've got an entry-level market base. You know, you're going to sit with a problem, because you're going to basically lose the behavioral consumer behavior that you want to achieve for that market, for whatever that percentage of your customer base. You're going to lose. They're never going to adopt your program. They're never going to be happy with the program, and it's never going to have the actual, let's call it, almost scientific outcome that you would like from it, which at the end of the day, like I've said to you, is repeat purchases, because you're just going to miss that base.
So there's different levels, I mean, different things that are going to appeal to different people based upon their economic levels. So as potentially, I mean, that's interesting what you talked about with Discovery, because I feel like now with them, they've got a certain client base, and they're, as you said, they've been more in that middle to upper income and maybe the wealthy base of customers.
Correct.
Now they've opened up the bank, and of course you can't just have a bank that focuses on wealthy people, or maybe there's enough in the middle class and things. So how is that, you know, is what they're trying to do going to appeal, you know, that's been appealing? Okay, great. Not everyone's going to rush to the gym like I am, like an idiot, to get their points, but are they going to do a similar sort of thing now with a bank?
So you are spot on.
Mm.
And I think that's going to be the question for a company like Discovery going forward. I think that's going to be the challenge in terms of the current program and the construct for the current program. You know, in terms of, you know, is that program really in its current context a fit? Maybe the better answer there, and we've grappled with that a lot, is potentially creating either one or two or three programs within the program. And actually what you do is you do create an entry-level program and
yes,
a core middle market program, and also...
They've done that, actually. They created like a core program specifically for the health, actually. So there were like benefits for going to Pick and Pay and things like that, but you didn't have to have the whole full suite. You didn't have to be one of their sort of, you know, more, I guess, their general members. It was like a, hey, here's a light version of it. More geared towards entry level, but come in, see what it's all about. In fact, I think they even tested something where they said, hey, our loyalty program is open to everybody for a period of time, right? It was just, hey, you do these activities, you do some exercise, you get healthier, let's get the whole country moving in that general direction, and let's just invite everyone in, which was an interesting concept. I mean, they seem to be pushing the boundary. I'm quite positive about them, obviously, you can hear. I don't think they are perfect, and I don't think that they do everything super well, but I like it when people push the boundary. They make it more interesting and appealing for people like me, the consumer, that wants to see, hey, what can I get out of this program? Is it worthwhile me participating in? So I like that. I'm not a huge fan, like you've said, which is I'm a bit dismayed to hear that a lot of the programs are me toos.
No.
Not hashtag me too, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the research that we did, so if we can just quickly go through that little value.
Please, tell me more about that. I want to hear what you've
Let's quickly go through that little value chain again. So what did the research? So there's something which I call hedonic and utilitarian. And so I'll quickly explain that. It's actually quite simple. It's very, very difficult academic names again, like we know the academics can be, but it's actually quite simple. So utilitarian is exactly what the word says, utility. So it's something that I want to buy because I need it.
Like toilet paper.
Toilet paper, absolutely. So, but then there's hedonic. Now, hedonic is something which I don't really necessarily need. I want to go on a trip to Spain, and I want to go where, you know, I want to have a very fancy car. A car, by the way, you can debate, is utilitarian. But do I really need a Ferrari? Probably not.
I definitely do.
Okay.
No, I definitely do. I don't even have a car. I get around either by, you know, I share a car and or I Uber everywhere. So, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. Is it really necessary? That's always a question to ask. Maybe we'll do a future episode just on, like, what's utilitarian? What do you really need? Just to get by.
That's actually quite amazing. And exactly what you now say is something that we've also grappled with a bit in terms of, you know, do you really need a car? We've brought up with the sense that we need a car, yeah. But actually you don't need these days with Uber and everything else available, all the transportation available. The question is, do you really need it?
That's it. And I think, you know, if you can break down your life to, as you're saying, the utilitarian items that you really need, is there a way to get all those technically for free through rewards programs? Because my ideal life is I get everything that I need, whether it's shelter, transport, food, entertainment, you know, all those things taken care of all through loyalty programs. And then I can do whatever I want. I can live in a cruise ship, you know, which gets paid for by points. That would be my ideal. But we're getting away from it. Let's get back to hedonistic. So you said hedonistic.
Is hedonic?
Hedonic. I'm sorry. The hedonic
and utilitarian. So hedonic, on the other side, okay, you got that now. It's the least, it's the ones that you don't really need that much. And then there's a third category there, which is symbolic. So symbolic, we know. I'm sure if I just use the example of electric cars and the Toyota
Prius,
there was quite a lot of research done on that, for example, to understand why do people not really buy a Prius? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great car and it's a low carbon emission and, you know, it is an electric car and that's a way to go and it's the future. But why do people still not buy it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a lot of jokes about it.
Yeah, it's obviously Eskom.
So the question and the research showed that it's because of symbolic value. So the customer symbolic value is quite high up in on the psychological agenda, and that's typically am I driving. And be careful around the brands, but am I driving a Mercedes or am I driving another car?
Yeah. Okay.
One that's less, not necessarily seen to be such a symbolically pertinent car. You know, and so what they've seen is that the problem with customer purchase behavior is as a part of that is affected by their symbolic awareness. Now, that's the three components. So the first thing is, do I need something?
Mm-hmm.
Is it something nice to have, or am I buying it just for the symbolic value of it? I actually don't need it. It's not really nice for me, but you know what? If I do have it, and there's a lot of research done on Parker Pen, and you know, in the old days, if you look at the consumer behavior literature around that, so a lot of customers do it because they just want the symbolic value of it.
Yeah.
So if you look at rewards and loyalty programs, starting off there, what do you expect in the research to see? Do you want to see hedonic to come through strong, or do you want to see utilitarian to come through strong, or symbolic? Now, our expectation was that we would see hedonic coming through strong, because rewards and loyalty programs works on differentiation, not on the core product. Not necessarily on product level. Remember I said in the beginning, products are commoditized.
Yeah.
So your utilities is commoditized.
Okay.
But what you would like to see is that hedonic comes through quite strong if the programs is constructed correctly. So the bad news is utilitarian came out strong.
Wow.
And hedonic came out less pertinent.
And I can imagine that, what was the third one again?
Symbolic. So
symbolic probably not very much at all.
Symbolic was not that high. It was also on the lower side. But symbolic for us, we've tested it, but it was not something that we expected that rewards and loyalty programs really would drive. Because, I mean, if it drives brand value and you want to make a symbolic value out of your brand, and I don't want to sound like a marketer or talk like a marketer.
Yeah.
I'll be careful to do that. But, you know, if your program does focus on creating a very strong brand that creates a symbolic value, then yes, you would expect symbolic to come through. But I don't think a lot of programs really in South Africa, and specifically overseas ones, is really focusing on that. I think it's
I don't think Ferrari's got like a frequent purchase a program, you know, buy two and get one free or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's actually quite true. Our question was to the participants, we've asked them, what do they see as the primary driver of the rewards and loyalty program? Does it create a need for utilitarian products, or does it create a need for hedonic products?
Mm-hmm.
So why did we ask that? Because, like I've said to you, the differentiation factor sits on the hedonic side. So what you would expect is rewards and loyalty programs does not play on a simple product level. A rewards and loyalty program doesn't want to, as such. Remember, we are working on consumer psychological level. Mm-hmm. We do not work on product level. So we want to change the consumer's psychology to think differently about the product, but not think necessarily of the product, but think differently about the product, which is a different concept. The point I want to make there is that, so if you look at the advert says, you know, you can take up, you can buy whatever product, you can buy sunlight soap.
Okay.
Now, that's great. I mean, the advert aims at you buying a utility, which is something you need.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe the advert goes one level further, which is, remember, this is the Checkers. This is Checkers. Let's use the Checkers example. This is a Checkers program. And with every single purchase, you'll get up to 25% back instantly on selected products.
Mm-hmm.
So nowhere in the brochure you will ever see on the rewards and loyalty program that it necessarily wants to sell a product. But what it says is, if you buy that product, you definitely do get a lot back. Now, or you get something back.
Mm.
And that something is either going to be monetary in nature or non-monetary. And that depends on what segment you targeted your program at.
Now, that's an interesting thing, because when it comes to, I have been in the past, always very much more focused on saying, getting money back is not necessarily the best thing to do. But maybe, as you're saying, maybe it's because of the segment that I fall into. For me, I'd much rather get the miles or the points, because I know what I can do with miles and points. I can do a heck of a lot more as opposed to just getting money. Is that what you found?
Absolutely. So a piece of research I also read a while back, they've done research on, call it the lower end of the pyramid.
Okay.
In South Africa, which is probably about 30 million people.
Wow.
I mean 20 to 30 million people. And the problem is, I mean, they earn like 14, that was about 4 years back,
yeah.
Research. I think they earn like something like 14 rand a day. And then it's probably, let's say today it's 26 rand, or whatever it is.
Okay.
Now, the problem there is, I mean, that part of the market doesn't want the trip to Italy.
Yeah, because you could give them a free ticket, but then what are they going to do once they get there? It's pointless.
It's pointless. So the fact is I just want to go and buy airtime. Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you, if I'm in that segment, and if I'm in that market, to give me airtime or to give me, you know, a coupon to go and buy milk or to go and buy bread is going to be 10,000 times more valuable psychologically and physically than giving me a trip.
Mm.
And that's what the programs in South Africa is missing. We all live in a copy-paste world of copy and pasting the one program that's working. And, yes, but that must work for everybody else. It will not work for you.
I get frustrated with that. I have to be honest. I get SMSs all the time. Oh, do this and you'll get 5 rand of airtime. I mean, and I sit there going, do you even know like who I am? Why are you even bothering? You've probably spent more money sending me this stupid message than you're going to get from people like me. Why are you doing this?
Because you're not an airtime market. But somebody else that would get it would absolutely be, you know, out of this world. About just receiving airtime.
Hmm.
So the research showed that utilitarian is coming out strong, which says the programs is driving, arguably not differentiation, but it's more driving the product sales. which to my point is actually missing the point of programs, of what the program's all about. Then you go to the next level to say, okay, the light. I've said to you that the light is the in thing now. In
the light is the new flavor of
That's the new flavor of the month. So if I bought a product and there was some differentiation and there was hedonic benefits to it, then I should actually have a lot of the light. Now, shockingly, that came out extremely low, which says that programs didn't get that scientific answer yet. For them to know that it's actually, from a research perspective, it already moved. To differentiate your proposition is not good enough. You need to actually need to add on the delight factors. So the question is, what does these delight factors mean? Now, I've asked this question quite a lot in my studies and also have tried to read it in literature, and I think the best explanation that we got from it, was the practical explanations around, I'm going... Let's use the bank again. Mm-hmm. I'm going in and I'm going to do my transactions, which most of people don't want to do in a bank anymore. But let's say I do and end up in a bank.
Right.
Once a year in a branch, once a year or twice a year. Immediately I'm putting on soft chairs and, there's a ticket put in my hand to say, okay, you know what? Don't worry. We're going to service you in 10 minutes. And within 10 minutes, you're going to be serviced. But by the way, we also give you a cappuccino in your hand. There's a cappuccino. Don't worry. And by the way, don't worry, we've got free Wi-Fi. While you sit here, you can sit and work. And we will even help you to make your work experience quite a nice work experience while you sit in a bank and wait. And by the way, if you leave here, we give you a little hamper with you because, you're really a valued customer of us.
I want to join your bank, Lee. This sounds
me
good.
Me too. I'm actually quite excited about that now. Sounds like a new business venture. So the cool thing about all of that is that's the light. That's where you create the light. And none of the rewards and loyalty programs is there. None of them creates the light because it's, again, copy and paste. So everybody is just following the leader. Nobody breaks out of that mold. Everybody's too scared. Because why? Because your investment in rewards and loyalty programs is quite extensive.
It must be huge.
And it's huge.
This is the thing that... Recently, and I think I'm going to be releasing an episode specifically about this. Again, it was a Discovery Bank thing, and Discovery Bank's again, it's topical, it's brand new, it's one of the things that people have been waiting for a heck of a long time, trying to see is this going to be the new eBucks? Is it going to be something? It's a major bank that's coming into the market now, trying to take on the big four, big five if you include Capitec. So. The question is, they have a program that they've introduced where, like in the past, you could get a watch, an Apple Watch, if you did, some activity and things, or you could get shoes. I mean, I'm wearing my Apple Watch right now. This is my second watch that I got from doing that. These are my shoes, right? Which, that's also why I had to go to the gym the other night. I've got to pay for these things, right? I only pay for them if I go each week and I do my goals. But they introduced a third thing, which now for Discovery Bank customers was get yourself a free iPhone. Is that delight? Is that what they were trying to do with getting a free iPhone if you, again, jump through a whole bunch of hoops? Is that what they were trying to do?
Yeah. So that's one of the things. But the other thing that they also want to do is so a lot of the rewards and loyalty conferences, there was basically two angles to rewards and loyalty. Okay. One angle was repeat purchase behavior. We want to sell products. Then there was a second angle, is we want your data.
Ooh, okay. This is a deep rabbit hole, this one, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I've always said, in South Africa we've had quite a lot of propositions where there was one very famous one where, you could get an iPad device if you – or you can get a – you get an iPad device if you open an account, for example.
Yeah.
So I know there was a lot of critics around that to say, it never worked because, everybody took it up and then they closed all the accounts.
Okay.
It was the most amount of, not necessarily close it, but it was the most amount of dormant accounts in South Africa.
Oh, wow.
And I always say to people, that wasn't a problem. That's not a problem because they've got your data now. They know who you are. You've bought that product. And when you bought it, you need to go through an onboarding process So they know your name, they know your surname, they know
they
your
know
cell
your
number,
income
they
level,
know your income
they
level, they know everything now.
Wow.
And that is more than good enough. So you can go dormant and you can even close your account, which is fine. I mean, there's legislation around, you know, at one point I need to not keep your data and I need to,
especially now.
I need to destroy your data, especially now. In those days, I don't think it was that, that strict. But the fact of the matter is what can I do? I can now phone you again. Mm. I can now phone you and say, Elon, you know what? I see your account's dormant and it gives me the opportunity to speak to you. Mm. And when I can speak to you, I can engage with you. And then if I can engage, I can maybe initiate a purchase. So the other theory about rewards and loyalty programs is maybe they should entice you to give your data. Now, let's get to the devices.
Mm.
Because there's maybe two reasons why I would like to give you a device. First thing is yes, the light. You're quite happy with me. It's a differentiated offering. So it's probably playing a bit in the hedonic space as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's hedonic, it's the light. And then, you know, but the other thing is also is that device that I gave you need to transact on, and especially if it's my company's SIM card, those transactions is going through my backend systems. So I know now much more about you than just your normal banking transactions. I've got your GPS locations potentially. I know where you're going. I know what you're doing. Now I'm playing on a few levels here. I'm playing on the level also of getting your data or of knowing you much better. Now that's what all the businesses tries to achieve, is know their customers.
And I suppose now with artificial intelligence coming into the picture in the world of business right now, it's only a matter of time before this company that you are interacting and transacting with on a daily basis, you're not even really thinking about it. It knows you better than you know yourself. It knows what you're going to spend, when you're going to spend it. It even knows things that you don't even know yet.
Yeah, Elon, spot on.
I must tell you a funny story, because this is there was a company when you're talking about this now. I remember talking to one of my clients in the United States, and he was saying one of the stores kind of got so into this, they got to know their customers so well, that they actually were starting to see when a woman came in to purchase her female hygiene products. So much so that when they noticed that there was a gap in the timing that she came, they knew she was pregnant before she did, right? Yeah. And then they started marketing to her, hey, have you got some pregnant vitamins and things like this? And she would be scratching her head going, why on earth am I getting this? And then next minute she goes to the doctor, to her gynae, and finds out she is pregnant. And apparently someone sort of put two and two together, and they actually said, hey, this is a problem. You're knowing a little bit too much about your customers. So I can foresee that being something that's actually going to happen here. And in fact, Pick and Pay did it to me once. I don't know if I purposefully signed up to their baby program. They have a baby program. They have a pet program. They have it's the baby club, the wine club, the pet club. And I guess at one stage I just signed up to all of them. I don't know why. And I had two kids that were, 10, 12 years old. And no. I still have – it was funny because I looked in my Twitter account the other day, and I had sent Pick and Pay a tweet, and they had made some changes to the program. And this is – I looked in this direct message that I sent to them, and I said, so much for you guys sort of – giving me these customized discounts. So far, all this week that I've got is baby nappies and formula. And I said, either you know something about me that I don't, or something's going on over here. And it turns out, they were just a couple of years ahead of their time, because now I am buying baby formula and nappies and things.
You know, a few years ago in the bank, we want the credit capability to almost analyze the customer, to advise salespeople in terms of what products they should take up.
Mm-hmm.
So it very simplistically start off by a few questions, because in those days, you know, we didn't have all the data available. So what a sales agent will ask you is 10 questions. And
okay.
They would complete the 10 questions, and there's an algorithm running at the back, and that algorithm then will give you a bit of a needs analysis to say, oh, yeah, Elon needs a home loan, and he needs this, he needs that. So, not surprisingly, we've stopped that a few years ago. We've stopped that because it wasn't successful. And I've always said it will never be successful to really run behavioral or a needs analysis on a complex human being. You know, you need enormous amounts of data, and you need data far beyond what we've had available. 10 questions not going to cut it to really explain what you as a customer really need. And to your point, and some of that, and my other point around the baby products, which you've mentioned, was that some of the, I've always said to them, you know, be careful, because it's almost like a medical student's in third year. Then you're at your danger, yeah, most dangerous stage, because you just know enough to be dangerous.
Yes, exactly.
And those 10 questions is probably just enough for us to be dangerous at that point in time. So that's where AI comes in. And to your point, this is where these devices start to play a crucial role, in terms of augmenting data onto your basic data to start to run that AI, and then to perform needs analysis on the customer on a continuous basis. But yes, to answer you on the initial question on why did I get the device, or why can I get the cell phone?
Seems like such a good deal.
Did
this company really think about it? You know, oh, I outsmarted them. Ha, 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 look at me. But
behind the scenes, I think sometimes, and hopefully it's either the people that really think about it and that really planned it and architected it at the back, or it's accidental in terms of very simplistically your first question, is it only for delight? I must say that there is companies and there is capabilities out there in South Africa, but it's less than a handful that really have the future insights to think that far, to actually want to assemble your data and actually use that data for bigger purposes.
Well, Louis, I feel like I could sit and talk to you for hours over here. And the good news is I'm going to, because I definitely want to have you back for another episode. But I really want to say thank you to you for giving us such a great insight into how loyalty programs work, the psychology behind it, the different market segments. You've made me think about things that I've never thought about before. And I'm very curious to get your insights on some of the new programs that are coming out, as well as some of the existing, some of the big market leading ones that are already have a big footprint in South Africa, because I'm sure you've got some very interesting insights as to which ones you think are going to work and which ones you think maybe need some work to be done to them, and how it can benefit people like you and me, because at the end of the day, we're all consumers, aren't we? So what we want is a good deal. And if there's a way for us to learn how to really benefit from these programs, why not? So thanks very much.
Elon, thanks very much. And thanks for inviting me. And I'll be glad to be back. And let's continue the discussion. Thanks.
That's it for this episode. Subscribe to our podcast for more exciting and informative episodes and learn how to maximize your loyalty rewards. Thank you for listening. Until the next time.
You've been listening to another episode from the Solid Gold Podcast Studios.